Over the summer, my buddy Jacob and I were out on an adventure in the Absorca Beartooth Wilderness. It's this huge area, big peaks, beautiful ridges, lodgepole forests as far as you can see. I'm based in Livingston, Montana, about an hour north of Yellowstone, and the trailhead was deep in the mountains, about halfway between where I live and the park.
We were just looking to do kind of a run hike. I think it was going to total about 15 miles.
Jacob's a really good human with a really good mustache. We were on this trail that hardly anybody goes on, heading up a mountain that hardly anybody climbs. What I remember is the trail was like pretty overgrown, a lot of dead and down.
Yeah.
Didn't seem like a lot of people had been on it.
Definitely not. I was kind of regretting wearing shorts because I was getting scratched up.
You can move 20 yards and then climb over a tree and then keep going.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
This kind of remote, quiet, wild country is a big part of why I live here. We'd seen fresh deer and elk tracks in the mud, but no people tracks, and thankfully no fresh bear sign. I should say, running in grizzly country, generally not the best idea. Back when I was on the bear beat, I even wrote about it. Moving quick can be a recipe to spook a bear, and it can also trigger a sort of prey response. Yeah, I remember thinking, it'd be kind of cool to see a grizzly today, but like from nice and far away.
And yeah, actually during the year, I had been kind of wanting to see one, and almost wanting to have an encounter, which now I think is really stupid.
This adventure we were on together was 2 days after the first episode of this show came out, where I talked with ranchers in bear country. So grizzlies were very much on my mind. We hope for like, you know, a nice encounter, the kind where you can see a bear from far away and watch it being a bear and like just see the cool stuff and not worry about the scary things.
Exactly. Because it's very cool that we share the landscape with them. And I respect them a lot. And I think there's so much fear around them that I almost wanted to have an encounter to not be afraid in a way.
And on this run, I came face to face with one. It was not the kind of encounter we were hoping for. So Jacob and I are on this hike run. We're hooting and we're hollering down by creeks where things are thicker. While running is a risky proposition in grizzly country, making noise is a good idea. It can let critters know there are people around and help you avoid a surprise encounter. We're 5 miles back in this area that had burned in a wildfire a number of years ago. It's open country, and it doesn't feel that bear-y at the time to either of us. I'm a hair in front of Jacob, and my guard's down.
And at that point, I remember feeling like I'm having fun. Like, this is fun. We're out here doing this. I like running in the woods. I felt like I was kind of in the moment. I was probably watching my footing, and I actually didn't look up until you yelled. And I don't know what you said. I don't know if you said like bear or holy shit or some combination of those words. But as soon as you yelled, I knew something was wrong and I looked up. And that's when I saw both of you at the same time, the bear and you.
Welcome to The Wide Open. I'm Nick Mott. There's a lot of stuff related to the season I learned in interviews or field reporting, or even, in this case, out on the trail, that didn't quite fit in a full episode, but I still really want to share with you. So this time, our first extra, a cautionary tale from grizzly country that also speaks to the impacts of the ESA.
As soon as I saw it, you were moving backwards and it was charging you. The bear did not hesitate to start going after you.
This story isn't just a mess I got myself in, though it is that. It's also a grizzly safety lesson and a story of what the Endangered Species Act can mean for a landscape. It's also just this moment I haven't been able to stop thinking about as I made the rest of this season of the show. So, safety stuff first. I already gave you the first couple tidbits of grizzly country advice. Running's kind of dangerous, make noise, but here's another lesson. Travel in groups. Your chances of getting hurt or killed by a bear are highest when you're alone. They go down a good bit when you're with one other person, and in groups of three or more, your odds of a bad bear encounter plummet. So I'm with just one other person, better off than alone, and we're doing one other thing that's really important where grizzlies live too. We were both carrying bear spray, and we both had it in our, we also had running vests on. Like that.
Yes.
So we had like running vests with, you know, water, snacks, all that stuff, and bear spray, and both of us chest pocket, right?
Yep.
Bear spray is basically a big can of really powerful pepper spray, same active ingredient. It sprays out to about 30 feet depending on wind. And to use it, you yank off the safety and squeeze a trigger on the top of the can. You ideally deploy in kind of a Z shape to create a wall of hot nastiness that a bear doesn't want to run through. Back on that trail, before I run into that bear, Jacob and I crest this ridge, and we start a gentle downhill into a new drainage. You heard how Jacob remembers it, and this is what I remember in those moments leading up to the encounter. Dark, tacky earth, a steep slope that's a pickup sticks game of dead lodgepole, and the overwhelming tangy smell of elk pee. Animals had been using the trail. I'm about 15 feet ahead of Jacob, so we're not chatting or shouting as we shuffle downhill. I hear something, and my head snaps up. I remember looking up, and I remember seeing two silhouettes, like a little silhouette and a big silhouette. Mm-hmm. And then I remember seeing the big silhouette immediately get down on all fours, and I, like, the sun hit its back, and I saw, you know, that, like, sort of beautiful brown fur, and I saw the hump on its back.
Yeah.
One of the defining features of a grizzly bear is this telltale massive hump, like someone sewed a volleyball at the top of its spine. And that's what I see in this moment. My brain flashes. Grizzly bear. There are a handful of majorly dangerous situations you can get into with grizzlies. It's never a good thing to spook a bear, and your odds are a lot worse if a grizzly's defending its food or its cubs. And this bear had that smaller silhouette next to it, too. So at least one cub. Within a second or two, this bear does what instinct tells her. She starts charging. How long the whole thing take? 5 seconds?
Yeah, 5-10 seconds. It was so fast. So incredibly fast.
Reporting on grizzlies, I've seen plenty of pictures of people in hospital beds ripped up by the animal's 4-inch claws. And every now and then, grizzlies do kill people. 4 folks have lost their lives in grizzly encounters in Montana since 2020. One of them, actually, not all that far from where we were hiking. More often, when bears and people meet in a bad way, it's the grizzlies that die. People packing a pistol shoot, reportedly because they're being charged. Still, the chances of a bad encounter are slim. Biologists have actually run the numbers in Yellowstone National Park, where the grizzly population is likely more dense than anywhere else in the region. There, your odds of getting hurt by a grizzly are about 1 in 3.5 million. I, of course, didn't have time to process any of this as that bear charged me. The mind, it turns out, does fascinating things in these situations. As this grizzly bear runs full steam ahead, time slows down, which is likely a good thing, because I'd guess the bear is less than 50 feet away from me when I bump her. Like, any thought I had was like a fraction of a thought that I've like rationalized since, so.
Yeah, filling in gaps afterwards.
What I do remember is just her charge, like the sound of her paws on the ground sounded like thunder. They sounded so loud to me.
I do remember hearing that. Yeah, absolutely. And it was, yeah, kind of an overwhelming feeling, sort of like a horse, essentially.
It was just like a horse. Yeah, yeah, it was like galloping.
Exactly. And I just remember seeing like her, I don't know, her fat, I guess, her body rolls, like her whole body vibrating with the effort to do that. And that was quite the sight.
So in that moment, this bear coming at me, I take a couple steps backwards behind a tree. I'm behaving in a way like the bear. On pure instinct, I don't have time for fear or reason. I just act. I think I must have wanted to put something, anything, between me and the grizzly. I slap my chest with both hands to grab my bear spray. I get it out, clutching it in my right hand, and the bear is to me. That tree I stepped behind no longer seems like much of a savior at all. And the safety, this little plastic sliding mechanism on the trigger of my spray, it's still on there. I need time to get it off. I jump off the trail. Or maybe I fall or I trip in terror, I'm not sure, and I slide headfirst on my back down that slope of dead trees next to me. The bear swings towards me, off the trail as I careen downwards. But in the fall, I have that second or two I need to pop the safety off the spray.
And I deployed, and I remember, like, I think it was like as I was sort of moving down the hill a little bit on my back, because I hit my head on a log, and it made me stop deploying when I hit my head. And so I remember thinking, like, fuck, I didn't deploy long enough. Because it wasn't a long burst.
I've carried bear spray with me hundreds of times. The propellant inside can expire. And I'm not always super careful about which can I pick up when I leave the house. We have at least a half dozen years old cans on a shelf at home. By sheer luck, I'd picked up our newest receptacle that morning. But even with a new can, I had no idea at the time if the stuff would actually work. On my back, my vitals exposed to this charging grizzly bear, the spray unleashes something violent and surprising to both me and the bear. The moment between when I spray and when she reacts lasts an eternity.
I remember watching that like orange cloud hit it. And in my head, she stopped pretty much right then. She turned around and she started just like snuffling. I watched her ears like change where they were at, and they kind of came up and moved around. And I just remember seeing sort of the profile of her. And then she took off back where she'd come from down the trail.
It was like she hit a wall. That was actually kind of amazing to see. After you deployed that bear spray and the cloud was there, as soon as it hit her, she just stopped and reared up and turned around and left. It was about as good as it could go.
Well, except for everything else. I mean, how far was she?
As time slows down for me in those few seconds of the charge, it also feels like my mind itself has jumped backwards out of my body. I was watching the scene somehow from 15 feet behind myself.
When the bear spray hit her and she turned around, it felt like she was far away.
Yeah, no, she was nearly on top of you. Like we're sitting at your dining room table right now. It was about that far apart. Just, yeah, like we are from across from each other.
That's not how it feels, and I'm really glad that's not how it feels.
I know.
So the bear leaves, but we have no idea if she'll come back. I'm coughing as I get up. I've inhaled bear spray, but my adrenaline's pumping too hard for it to bother me much. My first words to Jacob are, let's get the fuck out of here. So we start the 5-mile journey back to the trailhead. We get to the top of that hill we'd come down, to an open area that feels at least somewhat safe. We sit and snack and decompress. I'm shaking. And then we finish the trek out of there, cursing and sighing and yelling at bear-shaped logs and rocks the whole way. I've had a lot of long and challenging days on the trail, but it's never felt better to get back to the car. In the midst of writing a season of a podcast about endangered and threatened animals, the people arguing about their fates, almost unconsciously, I started trying to place what happened to me in the larger context of the Endangered Species Act in the days and weeks that followed. For example, it's pretty likely that grizzly sow would never have been where she was if it wasn't for the ESA, as in, our encounter would never have happened. Here's why. The bears got federal protections in 1975. Before that, the only grizzlies in the region were hanging on for dear life, mostly by eating trash laid out for them by park employees inside Yellowstone. But about 50 years ago, this monumental conservation effort began, spearheaded by ESA protections. These efforts paved the way for this mama bear, over generations, to make it to this very spot, where her and I met in a bad way. And other grizzlies did the same, spreading hundreds of miles farther than this bear I ran into. Then there's another issue. Reporting on grizzlies, I've talked with a hunting outfitter who said there were too many bears, that he gets charged all the time. Ranchers who don't let their kids go play down by the creek the way they did when they were growing up. I've listened to political testimony about maulings being a sign that bears had recovered, that we had to get them off the threatened species list, in part for the sake of human safety. And now here I was, experiencing that threat firsthand. To me, that grizzly charge wasn't a sign of too many bears. I was in as remote of an area as it gets. That sow and I were both just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I was in her country. She was just being a bear. What did change for me was this. Though I've always been cautious in grizzly country, the intensity of the fear I carried with me in those weeks after the attack was a new reality.
Every time I'm in the woods now, I see that 10-second movie play in my head, and it's so raw.
There's been some serious emotional fallout from this encounter for me and Jacob both. For weeks after it happened, I kept flashing back to the moment of the charge, as in, to a single image of that bear coming at me. I mean, everything I felt bound up with it. A powerlessness in the face of my own mortality. All the emotion and fear I didn't have time to process in that moment erupted in an overwhelming sense of nausea. Now, about 3 months after the incident, things are getting a little bit better. Jacob and I have both undergone some exposure therapy of sorts. We've been getting out a lot in grizzly country, trying to be safe, trying not to have a heart attack when we flush a bird or a deer out on the trail. We've been texting each other pictures of bear poop and stories of drawing bear spray when we hear rustling in the trees. But we're also both still grappling with what that experience means for us living in grizzly country.
I don't know, my experience in the woods has been before that and then after that, and kind of wondering, you know, how is my life going to change from this?
I mean, I've been thinking too, like, am I grateful this happened? It's like, is this a good thing or a bad thing or neither? I don't know. I don't know if I don't think I'm grateful for it because it was just so close. Yeah. But also it's good to know it's possible.
Just a couple weeks ago, as I felt I'd mostly recovered from it all, I visited the basin where grizzlies gather. I took you to in episode one of this show. I came upon three grizzly bears in an unusual spot, just off the road, and I recorded myself on my phone.
I'm sitting in my car and watching three grizzly bears, 300 yards away.
A few minutes later, I fact-checked myself with a rangefinder. They were way closer than I thought, only about 125 yards.
And borderline freaking out. But it's also pretty amazing to see them just doing their thing, not caring much about us.
There were another six or so people there, out of their cars, cell phones out, watching the bears in awe from the road, like they were in a zoo. I was struck by how different this experience felt from the encounter I'd had that day out on the trail. For these tourists, this encounter was an escape from their routine and their daily lives, not a part of it. I wanted to tell them that the grizzlies could cover that distance in seconds, that there was real danger here, right in front of us. But I also wanted to let them enjoy the moment. They had Washington and Utah license plates. It might be the only time in their lives they ever get to see something like this. So I bit my tongue.
They're close enough you can really see them with the naked eye, and my heart's pumping. I'm kind of shaking. Oh, this is something.
After the attack, I'd lost the safety on my bear spray. Just this little plastic tab that keeps you from depressing the trigger. So for weeks, this half-full can sat wrapped up in a trash bag on my front porch. This little reminder of what had happened, of how close it had all been. I decided the can was something I should keep in the house. One day, I took it to some public land nearby and deployed, just to empty it. I was alone, and I recorded it on my phone. The moment itself was anticlimactic in a way. It was windy, and the spray dissipated almost as soon as it left the can. I thought about what that kind of wind might have meant for my encounter, and I shuddered. There are tangible things I've taken with me from this experience. Make sure my bear spray isn't expired, have it where I can get it out in a fraction of a second. But emotionally, there are definitely other, harder to articulate things I'll always carry with me. And what it all means for Jacob and I both, for answering the questions we posed when we broke down the encounter in my dining room. How will our lives change from this? That's all still unfolding. I took that bear spray home. I wrote empty on it in permanent ink, and I put it on top of the bookshelf in my living room. This is our first extra. You can expect more every now and then down the line. Thanks to Corin Cates Carney and Mary Ald for editing, Jake Birch for the mixing and engineering expertise, and to the Montana Media Lab and Montana Public Radio. Special thanks to Jacob Lilly for breaking down that bear encounter with me, and to that grizzly sow for letting us both get out of there at least physically unharmed. And finally, two other things. First, big changes could be coming in how we manage grizzly bears. Join me in person as I moderate a panel with experts on all sides of the grizzly debates. We'll try to find a shared vision on how to coexist with bears, no matter what comes next. The event is Wednesday, November 20th at 6 p.m. at the 1900 in Livingston, Montana. Come check it out if you're in the area. You can find more info on our website. See you there. And also, we'd love to hear what you learned from season one of the show, and even hear any ideas you have for future coverage. We have a survey available on our website, the links in show notes too, and we'd deeply appreciate it if you took the time to give it some thought and fill it out. I'm Nick Mott. Thanks for listening to The Wide Open.